All right, all right.
Everyone!
Time for the Get to the Point review.
Welcome, everyone, to the Get to the Point review podcast. I am your host, Kelly McKinney of Hohenheim Productions.
And I'm your other host, Josh Gibson from Fourth Wall Players.
And this time we are joined by a very special guest, Charleone Thompson, actor, musician, and chef. And Charleone and I have worked together on a couple of projects now, right? We've been, it was Sunshine Day, and have you worked, I feel like you've worked on everything I've worked on with Lawrence.
Yeah, I feel like we just definitely about. Crossed paths on more than one occasion. Sunshine Day was the biggest one, for sure.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, for sure. That was a great project. That was one of my first features that I worked on in Chicago. It was a lot of fun.
Me too. It was my first indie film and my first kind of speaking gig too.
Yeah, and I remember that. And we even had the special effects shots and everything, man. That was a lot of fun. Gosh,
yeah, it was definitely a lot of fun.
That was pretty crazy. That was crazy. Well, so Charleone, so acting, what have you done since then? I know most recently I see a lot of posts about you're doing a cooking show now, right?
I am. I started working on my culinary degree a couple years ago. Mm-hmm. Part-time at Moraine Valley College, in between filming and working. And I'm about two classes away from my culinary degree. Obviously, the pandemic slowed things down, quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
What so I kind of lost a year there. But now I'm back to chasing it down.
We all did. Right. And I see those posts. So those look nice. And so specifically, what's the you're working on a show, though, too, right? Like, is it a show? I thought I saw video clips, interview clips.
Well, so during the pandemic, obviously, not only did school come to a halt, but productions pretty much worldwide came to a halt. I decided to take the time to kind of develop my own craft. And I turned my apartment into two film sets. So in my dining room area, I turned it into my cooking show set and, kind of decorated it with pictures of different things that I love in food. And I bought a bunch of film equipment and I downloaded, Adobe Premiere Pro and Creative Cloud and started interviewing people. And so basically the premise is I cook a different dish every episode. And I interview people that I've worked with in the industry, actors, directors, musicians, writers, and whatnot. And we eat the food and we discuss their past, present, and upcoming projects. And it was just kind of a way to, keep those creative juices flowing, in the slower times of the pandemic. And we've got about three episodes under my belt now, really good viewership, for a YouTube cooking channel that's just getting off its feet. And at some point, of course, I'd love to interview you guys.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Definitely. Man.
I always look for
like food
to come to Chicago. Yeah, right. I love food. I love food too. Yeah. So, where's the or should we be expecting a new album soon too with your music career?
So, I kind of shifted my focus a little bit. I've been singing and writing songs my entire life, as long as I can remember. Acting, I didn't discover until maybe 6-7 years ago. So I would say when I first started, my focus was maybe 90% music, 10% film. Now, 6 years into the game, my focus is probably 95% film and 5% music.
Yeah.
5% music.
I probably average a song a year anymore. I love music. Film has just been kind of an easier path to break into, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the tracks that you were releasing a few years back. They were great, man. I love R&B anyway. So I was all about sharing.
He does
it,
love R&B.
I did get a chance to do another project with Lawrence Wallace, who directed Sunshine Day, where we first met. And he did an indie film called Pieces of David. And I have one of my songs on his soundtrack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought we had worked together on Pieces of David. I was a director of photography on that one.
Oh, perfect.
Mm-hmm. And I played.
Yeah. Used one of my songs in one of the sequences where the guy was getting chopped up by his girlfriends.
Okay. Oh, awesome. Okay. Gotcha. And I remember that. I remember that song in the film too. That's awesome. Okay.
Sweet. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, so music only barely flows into this because the name of the recent movie that we are reviewing is Boogie.
Boogie,
which really confused me. It wasn't until like even 15 minutes through the film when I was like, oh, his name is Boogie. Okay, I get it. Okay, gotcha. This guy's Boogie. All right. Okay. Right. We can dig it. Yeah. So as you all know here, we always start off by reviewing a recent movie. Like I said, we chose Boogie 2021. And who do we want to start off with? Josh?
I don't even remember what I wrote, so we can start off with me.
Josh, let's see. Let's see. What did you think all about right. Boogie 2021?
So last night, Josh thought about Boogie, my get to the point review is I'm working on it. I just can't read well. Okay. All right.
You can turn that microphone.
I'm good.
Okay.
I think it's pronounced Huang. Wing Eddie Huang.
Yeah.
Eddie Huang has dreams of continuing his dad's sports legacy by breaking into basketball. In so doing, he's torn between reality and his dreams to be an NBA star. His mother is not the nicest woman in the world.
This is true. This is very true. And mine didn't fall too far from that. So basketball and acting is not fun in Boogie. And awkward line delivery pulls from the deeper subtext and the message is lost. And I'm confused as to why the mom is painted as the antagonist. Why she was painted as such the bad guy. I felt like she was overly hostile in every scene that she was in.
Right.
And all she wants the best for her son, and she wants them to stop dreaming and chase something realistic. And what was realistic in the end is still not necessarily, it's not the dream, but it's getting you much closer to where you wanted to be. Now, of course, the way it turned out, you know,
yeah,
everything else, yeah, you know, like, but so I expected more from the film because of the hype. But yeah, Charlene, what did you think of Boogie? Did you just love every moment of it?
I mean, I thought it was entertaining. I wasn't really sure what to expect. Obviously, it's an indie film and specifically a focus feature. So you kind of know, like, right when you see that, you kind of have a general idea of what kind of vibe you're going to get, you know?
Right.
Right.
So I felt like it was... I feel like it was very entertaining. It definitely, like, the rhythm of it was definitely, you know, unusual. But, you know, it's an indie film, once again. So, you know, the rhythm isn't going to be exactly Hollywood, you know? And it's not supposed to be.
We've been in those before. Yeah.
I agree with you. The mom was a bit antagonistic, but I think they spent a lot of time trying to kind of explain where she was coming from, you know, with the marriage that she never really wanted. And then trying to make the best out of that, especially like you said, when it came to her son and just wanting the best for him. So, you know, maybe some of the choices around that were different, but if I had to sum it up, I would say it was entertaining. It was it was an entertaining indie film, you know.
Okay,
it kept my attention. Yeah. It kept my attention. I wasn't like zoning out. That's for sure.
I mean, I like basketball movies.
Yeah. Well, you know, I felt like this one didn't basketball as much as I thought it was going to. And which brings us perfectly segues into the next part, because as a joke, we review a review of the movie. And this time we took a look at New York Times review by T.O. Bugby. And I thought it was a great interpretation of the framing in this review. Okay. That highlights a part of the film that I missed due to like the bad acting and kind of awkward line deliveries. But I couldn't disagree more with his opinions about the basketball choreography. He was praising the basketball choreography.
Yeah, I remember reading that, yeah.
And it wasn't until the very end that I saw semi-impressive basketball choreography, because before that, all of the basketball scenes were these like quick Marvel cuts. Like, they don't want you to see the action, and like, we're just seeing people fall down, and then all of a sudden it's crowd reaction. And we didn't get enough time. We didn't spend enough time with Boogie in those scenes. I was never convinced he was a good basketball player through the whole movie. We never saw any of that. Right. And after chasing a scholarship so hard for a year, what do we have to prove that with Charlemagne turning him down? You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, come on. Yeah, yeah.
So like that was what they could have stressed to me. Show me, impress the audience with his basketball skills so that we're rooting for him.
Yeah, and show,
that
would have, tell.
Yeah, that would have put a lot more emotion into the movie for me. Mm-hmm. And then, gosh, I mean, awkward line delivery here. Like, I couldn't believe it. We were like 5 minutes in the movie and he's like, you have a pretty vagina. That is not a pickup line.
Yeah.
That is not a pickup line.
At least not a good one.
At least not a good one.
Yeah, it worked.
It worked because it was written in the script that way. Because
it was written to work.
Because it was written in the script that way.
I mean, we won't know until we test it out in real life. I mean, I won't recommend it,
okay,
but...
Okay. Well...
I think we're about 5 years past the time frame when we can use that line and get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Oh, yeah. So what did you think of the review?
My Get to the Point review on T.O. Bugby. I didn't think they delved too far into the plot.
It was a short
review. But they were... I mean, they were pretty on point with the underdeveloped supporting cast. I thought overall the synopsis was lazy.
Yeah, you know, we'll see. And that was another thing that I found interesting. A lot of the supporting actors, I felt, outshined the lead actor. Like, I mean, the woman who played the love interest, she was fantastic.
Right.
Like her, you know, like there were very few awkward line deliveries from her. And it's really just because the writing is kind of all over the place. We're constantly shifting focus in the conversations. And so like that was disorienting. But other than that, but
I think that Tia was talking more like, not so much like middle characters or, you know, like mid characters. I think he meant more like other basketball players, things like that. Like they were very generically.
Yeah,
written.
Like his best friend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That was what I meant. I didn't mean like the mom and the girlfriend and all that stuff. But
I was just giving props where props were due.
Fantastic.
Some of that acting really shone.
That's my favorite thing to do in independent films like that, is look for the people who like outshine everyone else. It's like, oh, well, they belong somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, and like what he was saying about the framing, I didn't even think about it. How at first I was confused about the framing because we have a lot of really big wide shots where everything was in focus. And then we have these tight, squanchy shots and going back and forth. Like when he said that it was, we as the camera were basically Boogie's like frame of mind. Then it like made sense. Like it was like, oh, you know what?
Right.
Like, okay. You know, because he's unfocused. You know what I mean?
Else,
that's why everything's in a wide shot. You know what I mean? Or when it's squanchy, it's because he's dealing with an internal battle.
Yeah.
And it was like, okay, so at least the framing was inspired.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like at the very least, the framing was inspired. The problem is that the framing shows how boring Boogie is. You know what I mean? Like mentally. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, like it's like this dude's, you know, kicking rocks, man. But yeah, I mean, that was how I felt about the review. It definitely brought to light the best parts of this movie, though, for me when I read the review. What did you think, Charlie?
I agree with a lot of what you guys said. I felt like his review, you know, much like the movie, his review was kind of all over the place in a way. I felt like at the end, it wasn't until like the last line of his review that it kind of brought it home for me. And I think his last line says something to the effect of, it was an entertaining movie, but it didn't quite hit the mark of kind of what you would expect in a Hollywood-esque, you know, movie.
For the silver screen.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right. And I thought that was a pretty good, that was like that one-liner was a pretty good, like he could have just said that, and that would have been acceptable.
And that would have been a good review of the movie.
Yeah. And I definitely agree with some of what you guys said about, you know, kind of some of the other characters, like, and to be fair, there were a lot of semi more established actors, you know, featured throughout.
Absolutely.
Like the guy who played the coach. I've seen him in a few things. I think he was in SWAT, which is one of my favorite, you know, kind of action movies.
And you know,
the main star was kind of unknown.
Right. Right. Yeah. 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 Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. You're right. And what was interesting about watching the acting in there is for the main character, and I apologize that I didn't write down his name.
Eddie?
No, Eddie Huang is the Eddie Huang's the director, and he played Uncle Jackie in the film. He made cameo as Uncle Jackie. That's not Eddie Huang. The main actor in it. Mm. It was like watching my acting in independent films. You're either trying too hard to put emotion into the scene, or you're trying too much to be casual, and they both come off odd in high def film. You know,
right.
They both come off awkward. It's either an awkward line delivery and it feels too forced, like I'm not really feeling it, but I'm going to show my faces. You know what I mean? Like, or you're just way too relaxed. You're trying to play it too cool and nothing comes across, and your lines all of a sudden don't matter. And that made it hard to watch, especially with his father. You know, the guy playing his father was a really strong actor as far as like charismatic, you know, like his, when he's talking about the tennis game and everything, it's like, I feel like we should have felt that, but they portray him as such a slimy person. We don't know what to take seriously, like, as, you know, he's actually wise, or what's like, this is just a gangster. You know what I mean?
It was
so confusing. Whereas in The Irishman, you always took all of the characters seriously. You knew when they were joking, when they were supposed to be coming across serious, like, just in, you know, the difference. And like you said, Charlene, like, when it didn't really hit the mark for what you want for the big screen, you know what I mean?
To that point, I also found it unique in this movie that the use of the foreign language. I've never seen a film, independent or otherwise, that the way they incorporated the other language into it, it was very unique. Like, usually with a film like that, you'd expect to see all foreign language and subtitles, or all English with a hint, but this was fairly laced throughout the entire movie. I've never seen that.
Yeah, especially when the mom talked. That was crazy to me, like, because I had trouble, like, all of a sudden I would hear a sentence in English and then the subtitles would pop up because she'd be speaking in Chinese and in Mandarin. What was interesting as well is that, for whatever reason, when I first started watching the movie, I thought they were Vietnamese. I don't know why. And then they were talking about China. I was like, okay, so they're Chinese. So, okay. Right. Because there's a difference. There's definitely a difference. And like, just like what they said with the Taiwanese beer, it's like, it's complicated, right? Because it's a territory of China. They're not supposed to be their own independent country. Right, and China doesn't like if you say they are, you know. they get kind of like, hey, I guess, that's kind of like with Puerto Rico, right? Do we get upset if Puerto Rico says they're a country and not a state or territory? I don't know. I don't get upset.
I don't get upset.
I don't know.
Puerto Rico can be whatever they want to be.
We're all kind of pretty much in agreement.
Yeah.
There were definitely enjoyable parts of the movie. Mm-hmm. seeing the awkward line deliveries and the acting just brought it home. It's like, man, you know, like,
it's hard super, for me to get past those things. Like, personally,
it is. Well, I mean, just for me to attach myself to the story, you know what I mean? When I see that, and it's like,
right.
It just makes me want to improve my own movies better, because now I know what happens when people watch my movies. You know what I mean? When my independent features,
when Jake reads a line in the Here and Now,
when Jake reads a line in the Here and Now. Yes,
exactly. We love you, Jake.
We still love that movie too.
It's so awkward. It's so awkwardly done. Like, it somehow works.
It's somehow charming.
I don't know how.
Oh, okay. Well,
anyway,
being that Charlion has endeavored to put forth with the culinary arts, we decided to make the bulk of this episode our basically favorite movies and TV shows about food or chefs. We didn't really narrow it down.
Mine's just about food, basically.
Yeah, I've got a mixture. I've got a mixture here on my list for sure. And Charlene, would you like to kick us off with some flavor on
absolutely
your first pick?
Mm-hmm. So if we're going to talk food and film, I would have to start out with, and it's kind of two sides of the same coin. So I'm going to throw two movies, but it's two sides of the exact same coin. We got to talk about Goodfellas and The Godfather. Okay, so both mafia movies, both Italian in nature.
Yeah.
And you see a ton of Italian references, food, cooking dishes and is laced throughout the movie. Obviously, Goodfellas and The Godfather are classic movies, some of the greatest films of all time anywhere in the world. And I think a big part of the success of that is kind of the feature of the food. So you might have Paulie, you know, in the kitchen, you know, talking about how he likes to dice up garlic and onions to the point that they liquefy in a dish. And by the time he's done, you're just like salivating, like, oh my God, that looks so good. And then he's like chopping up, you know, Italian sausage, just throwing it in the pot. It's like you can smell it and you're living in it, you know? Those are two movies that every single time I watch them, I'm going to be starving practically to death by the time I'm halfway through the movie.
Yeah. You know, that's interesting that you brought up Goodfellas, because I always think of the scene where when they all actually went to jail, how it was cushy and they were all like in a giant kitchen in a room together. Yeah, like, yeah. You know, there was even a phone there and everything else. They could talk to people on the phone. And yeah. It was, you know, it was like, we just had a feast every single day. They bring us fresh groceries and everything else.
Right. Yeah. Then you see really the bread great. And you see the wine, you got red and you got white. So now I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. I'm like,
yeah, I feel you there. Nice. Yeah. Good call. Have you got a gangster movie?
No.
Well, then I'll go with a show, a TV show that equally makes me salivate and hungry every single time. And it ends up being the worst possible thing ever for my diet, because it's a 45-minute show. So by the time I would get any ingredients together to make like the first dish, they're already to the third dish in the show.
Right.
And that'd be The Great British Baking Show. Yeah. Like started in 2010. And, you know, I summarized the show for those who aren't familiar with it to say amateur bakers compete for a cake stand in a gorgeous reminder of what reality TV can be if you don't muck things up about with manufactured tension and obscene drama. Like this is what's most amazing to me about the show, besides just the baking is really good. It's very, very creative, is that it's a reality TV show with no manufactured tension or drama. It is just the only time we feel pressure is when the contestants feel pressure. We don't have some guy going, and Lydia just messed up her dish.
Yeah.
Let's see if she can recover. And then like zooming in on her crying. They don't do that. No, like if someone's crying, the hosts like take them over the side and is like, are you okay? No, calm down. It's all right. You're going to be fine. You know, like trying to really calm them down and everything. It's like, you know, they care about the people.
Right.
There. And they do all of that. Like, I want to say it's 13 weeks or something like that for a cake stand and a bouquet of flowers. That's it. Not for $10,000. And a lot of times they have to pay out of money for their own dishes. They're responsible for their own ingredients. Like it's pretty serious. They spend a week preparing, like, you know, for each weekend that they go onto the show. It's pretty intense. And like no manufactured tension, just talent, people, and critical cooking. You know, they're critical about the skills. And, you know, we get to see Paul Hollywood's tan and hairline develop over the years. It's really fun. You
know? Right.
So, yeah. But every single time I watch that one, like, I get hungry for something they're making. And because I don't have time to bake before the episode's over, I just end up getting, like, those little muffins. Mm-hmm. Like the little muffins, the bag of muffins, like 6 bags of muffins. And I'm like, oh, it's not claggy. You know what I mean? Because I'm a goofball. So I have to eat them and, like, pretend I'm, you know, critiquing the perfectly delicious cakey muffins.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty pathetic. Yeah. What do you guys?
I was going to say pathetic. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of any reality TV shows, so unfortunately, I've not watched anything like that. And for some reason, I just seem to have a blank spot in my movie thing with chef related movies. I do have 5 movies though. So my first get to the point review is Waiting. And I said, the dramatic retelling of the traumatic account events of a few unsuspecting servers in a steakhouse overrun with the perfect storm of asshole customers.
That's a brilliant movie, which, of course, we do have a Note of Brilliance episode.
We do have a Note of Brilliance of as well. So
if you're, that's something if you're already out on the YouTube, check it out.
Yeah.
The only, you know, that one slides under the radar because when we first had it up, I had the, because there's so many references to penises.
Yes.
I had the 18 plus I had the 18 plus warning on it before. So that's why it had so few views. Go like it up now. I removed the 18 plus, but you can hear the word penis a million times if you want.
Do it.
Yeah. Waiting. That's a good film. I mean, so surprised. I mean, I'm not surprised in today's day and age that it has such low ratings.
Right.
But you'll note that it has a very high audience approval rating, both because Ryan Reynolds and Justin Long are brilliant. And so I is love Anna Faris.
And Anna Faris too. Yeah.
Yeah. But also because anyone who's ever worked in a restaurant can relate to those people right away.
Oh yeah.
You always can relate to somebody in that freaking film.
I knew all those people.
I knew all of those fucking people. Yeah. Like no doubt in every restaurant I've ever worked in.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like, it's realistic, but there's also a key to that. You know, everyone wants to spin it to be offensive.
Right.
But the thing is that all of those people in there get along. Yep. They all operate like a family. And that's why it's not inappropriate. They all understand each other's relationship and where those boundaries are. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It's like the same jokes wouldn't have went to tit grabbing or something like that.
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
It's
not grab ass. You know what I mean? Like there's still appropriate boundaries. You just have to know who you're dealing with.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? In those sorts
of
situations. And
then the perfect thing about having the new guy come in and kind of witness all of it. Yeah.
He becomes our introduction to this. Yeah. To the establishment. Yeah. That's a good call. Mm-hmm. It's a good call.
That's a great movie. That's a classic, hilarious, flawless movie. Mm-hmm. Everybody in it, I believed every character. The new guy was it John Francis Daly, who's just brilliant in everything he's in.
Yeah.
Louis Guzman, who's amazing. You know, everybody in that movie was just awesome.
Yeah.
It was Latinx actors. When I brought up Louis Guzman, I brought up Waiting because I'd already used Count of Monte Cristo. Yeah, that's when I knew I brought up Waiting on one of my lists before.
We've
talked about Waiting in a previous episode too.
Well, it's funny you mentioned the Count of Monte Cristo. Like, you just blew my mind because that's on my list. And the Count of Monte Cristo is my absolute favorite movie of all time.
It is very, very close to one of my favorite movies of all time as well. You're talking about the 2003 version, right?
With Jim Caviezel and Guy Pearce.
James Caviezel.
Yes.
Yes.
My absolute favorite movie of all time for a million reasons. I mean, it has everything. You've got your action and your comedy, your suspense, and it's a thriller, and it's dramatic, and it's inspiring, and it's just everything you kind of want in a movie. But the reason it made my food list was because there's a scene where the Count of Monte Cristo has just saved the life of his young son, and he invites him to his castle, you know, to have breakfast in the morning. And he signals, you know, for the service, and they bring in these trays of like this fresh fruit and grapes and cheese and wine. And the young actor who plays Superman, his name escapes me at the moment.
Henry Cavill?
Yeah, Henry Cavill, you know, who's like a teenager, you know, in the movie. You know, he like licks his lips and he's like, man, this food looks amazing, you know?
That is Henry Cavill.
Yes.
I just realized that. I have that movie. I've watched it a million times and I just now realized that's Henry Cavill.
That's him as a teenager, you know? As a teenager, like, he nailed it. Like, you can see this kid, you know, have a bright future. And I just love that scene so much. You're and right. It's another one that every time you see that scene, you're instantly hungry, you know?
Yeah, no. And especially considering, I mean, you know, like just the whole story, what leads up to that scene is just so great because we're like, he's got him in the palm of his hands. You know, we feel for Edmond Dantes. We're like, yes, you got it, man. And then, you know, like it's fun in the movie, whereas in the book, it's like that moment in the book is very calculated and manipulating. But when they do it in the movie, when Luis Guzman comes up and mentions the gold, it feels like so silly and fun. You know what I mean? Like, oh yeah, we just let that slip in front of him. Yeah, like, yeah, we just let that slip. Like, yeah. love it. Like, it's not going to get back to father, right?
Yeah, right.
Love that. That's
the spot shipment.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yeah. Freaking love it. Yeah. That's one of my favorite movies of all time too, man. That's great. I rarely hear people praise that movie and I freaking love it.
Well, that's like, why you surprised me when you brought it up. Cause I almost never hear anybody speak about it either, but it's pound for pound my favorite.
I brought it up in training. We had an episode of the podcast about training montages.
Yep.
And I brought up The Count of Monte Cristo as one of my favorite training montages when he's training to be a count in the prison. I love that scene from beginning to end. He's learning economics and math and everything, how to read, all the while he's being taught how to sword fight. And
another amazing actress. Well, I believe his name was Richard Harris.
Yep, yeah, Richard Harris.
Yep, the original Dumbledore.
The late great and a genius, Dumbledore. You know?
He's amazing. He is, and like, and he is so perfect in that role too.
Yeah.
Like you, he's so the conviction, you know, like you believe he's been in prison for forever. Like there's no doubt in my mind. Like he was not an actor before they got on set. He was in the prison. They came in the prison. He dug up through the floor. They were like, we're going with it. Change the script. Like that's what happened. You know, he's freaking amazing. Love him. You know, God rest his soul. He's a great guy. Okay. So wait, then, Count of Monte Cristo, that was next on your list then, right?
Yep,
okay.
Absolutely.
Wait, back around to me.
Back to you.
All right. Well, I'll have to go with Chef from 2014, Jon Favreau, because it is a truly inspired film that explores the reality of fathering a severed home with a love of art and passion that shows up on screen. So for those of you who don't know, Chef 2014 is a movie that Jon Favreau, after doing all the Iron Mans and everything else, he felt that he was losing touch with why he got into film because of all these huge big budget projects. He was like, I'm going to go film an indie film on my own. It ended up inspiring his like love for cooking, which he's, I mean, always had, but then he got professional, you know, culinary arts training for the film. And it's funny because I say it's truly inspired because he was leaving his busy career in large film to go do an indie film about a big time chef who left his big time career in, you know, at a restaurant to start a food truck. You know what I mean? Like he literally lived the adventure of rediscovering his passion for film through a movie where he played a character who rediscovers their passion for cooking.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's just one of those like, it's like fucking mind blown. You know what I mean? One of those, it's like, it's not Schrodinger's cat, but it's something close.
Yeah. Sure.
It is. Sure. Just go with it. All right. It's a comedy show. We're just continuing on. Yeah. Chef. Have you seen that, Charlie?
I haven't seen it. I've seen the previews. I'm a huge Jon Favreau fan. He's another one of those people that everything he touches, you know, just gold. So I am going to see that.
He said, well, Daredevil. Like, come on now. One mistake.
I'm not blaming him for it. I'm just saying. Yeah. It's the exception that proves the rule.
It's the exception that proves the rule. All right. Fair enough. All right. Josh, what's next on your list?
My next one is Julie and Julia. And my get to the point review on that one is Amy Adams proves that neither Meryl Streep nor Julia Childs has shit on her. Is that Jane Lynch? That's my whole review.
that's your whole review. There we go. His name's right there. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Julia.
No, but seriously, it was really kind of interesting. She kind of set off to do, what is it like? She had cooked a Julia Child's recipe one day, each day for a year. Was that what it was?
She cooked more than one recipe a day because she did 500 and she did like 594. Oh,
that's what it was. Yeah. She wanted to like do the entire, days. She wanted to do the whole book the or whole whatever cookbook in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's a pretty inspiring movie.
I thought it was interesting. What's amazing to me about this one is that it's a double biopic.
Yeah.
That's what's amazing to me about it is that it was a very clever way to tell the story.
It was filmed very well.
It's very, I mean, and Meryl Streep, God, you know, it's like, we know that review is a joke.
Amy Adams
shows that Meryl, I don't think so, man. Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep's a god. No, seriously.
Meryl Streep's god, yeah. But you know what? We should have a movie where she plays God. It would be fun.
It'll happen.
But it has to be cheesy.
It'll be a musical.
You know, it'll be a musical.
That's like all she does anymore is musicals.
Yeah. Well, No, but that's a good one. I had that one on my list, but I had added a different one because I knew you had that one. Yeah. All right, Charleon, what have you got next?
Okay, well, since I haven't done a TV show yet, I'll throw kind of a strange one. Breaking Bad. So when you think about food, you don't typically, your go-to probably wouldn't be Breaking Bad, but me being the fat person that I am, Los Pollos Hermanos, the central restaurant where Gus Spring is the owner-operator. It's a chicken place with a unique recipe for chicken with all kinds of herbs and seasonings and spices. And they even have sequences in there where they show like the commercials for Los Pollos Hermanos. And it, for some reason, it just looks really good. Like I wanted to taste Los Pollos Hermanos and see what it's all about, you know? And that's just my inner fat person. But every time I watch Breaking Bad, I end up freaking hungry.
And I thought you were just going to make it a crystal meth joke.
I was like, cook's meth.
He's the cook. He's the cook, baby. He's the cook. You know, Walter White's the king chef in that film, in that series, for sure.
There is that aspect, sure.
Right. Well, and you know, it's supposed, you know, like Los Pollos Hermanos is supposed to be like making fun of KFC, sort of,
in a sense, because
of the 9 secret herbs and spices. And I forget what Gus Fring's recipe was, but it was something, it was like a single digit number, special herbs and spices. When I remember the commercial too, because they show like the breadcrumbs and the flour crossing over.
Yeah, and the chicken I think legs. It was like 9 that. Herbs yep, and spices or something like that. It looks pretty interesting
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
And I think, I thought yeah. I heard they were saying something about recreating the restaurant, kind of a Universal Studio style. Like they have a on The Simpsons, they recreated like Moe's Tavern and Krusty Burger and all of that. I think they were talking about doing that with Los Pollos Hermanos.
Yeah, and I think they're talking about doing that, and they're going to do it in Albuquerque, right? As I think is what I heard. Is that
I'll make the trip.
Albuquerque? So will I. You know, it was interesting. So the guy who did the movie Super Size Me, not too long ago, he did a documentary called Holy Chicken or whatever, where he opened up a fast food restaurant that used all natural chicken over in just in Ohio. And it's called Holy Chicken. And it's still like, you know, but what it was is like basically his attempt to expose all of the facade of the fast food industry. Like all of these buzzwords that they use. Well, if you take a look at what the law says, they don't mean shit.
Yep.
Because free range chicken, all that means legally is that they have access to the outside, which means they can open a door and put a 3-foot space where they can go outside. The chickens will never go outside because chickens just don't fucking do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they're free range chickens now. Like all these buzzwords, it was kind of amazing. I still want to make that trip to Ohio just to go check out Holy Chicken. So I'd definitely go to Albuquerque for Los Pollos Hermanos. Yeah, for sure. You
know, George Carlin had a pretty good bit about that too. He used to talk about all the buzzwords they use in advertising and how much BS it was.
And it's so right. And it's what's really a shame is for people to know this stuff, we have to either make a documentary about it or we have to have a comedian telling us about it.
Right.
In a basically an asshole way, in a pessimistic way for us to even think about it. A lot of the times that's what's really sad.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's a great, what a great pick. Breaking Bad, one of my all time favorite series. Love Vince Gilligan. Love Bryan Cranston. We've sung its praises a million and a half times for sure.
It's one of the best shows of all time. No contest.
Yeah, no, for sure. I'd put it next to about anything and be willing to break it down and argue with anybody. And let's see. I think what we'll do, because we're talking about food that makes you hungry. Okay, I'm going to go with All Dogs Go to Heaven, 1989. Okay. And this is because this is one of those things where it's like it makes you hungry. It's the pizza. Mm-hmm. We discussed this right before the show. The pizza in that movie looks so good. The cheese is just melting off of it. You know, like it's animated, but the cheese is the same thing with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. It always looks you what, but you want to eat it. Just like the bread in Aladdin. Like I always wanted that bread. Like that bread looks so stiff and like perfect and fresh. It's so yummy. It looks animated, but it still looks amazing. And so to summarize, All Dogs Go to Heaven, for those of you who haven't seen it, it is a reminder that drugs were more than just a prop on film sets in the 80s, and yet an endearing animated film from my childhood, for sure. So,
yep.
Yeah, the pizza.
That's another Don Bluth one.
Don Bluth. Gosh, he's amazing.
All the best, most of the best cartoon movies from our childhood were Don Bluth.
Yeah, Saber Spark is another YouTube channel. He has an excellent video about Don Bluth's career and kind of how Hollywood screwed them over.
Oh yeah,
and amazing talent, very unique animation style. Mm-hmm, love him to death.
So my next one is on The Princess and the Frog.
Okay,
and my get to the point review on this one is Tiana must deal with an unforgiving loan company and a non-sympathetic best friend to start a restaurant in New Orleans. After taking an adventure as a frog, she convinces her friend to front her money to start her dream restaurant. Happy ending. No, seriously, though, the food in that, the beignets or whatever, that I want to try them.
Yeah, no, Binging with Babish has done an episode on the food in Princess and the Frog, as well as in Breaking Bad, in pretty much every movie we've talked about so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, Binging, Babish is all over that stuff. Mm-hmm. He's got it taken care of. I love his recipes for a lot of things, by the way, too. It's great. And Charleon?
Well, so I did have Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was on my list, just for the record.
Was it the pizza?
Absolutely the pizza, especially in part one. I mean, if you're not craving pizza after part one, I don't know what to say. But I don't know. To shift gears, I was thinking about Beetlejuice. Amazing movie. Obviously, Tim Burton's a genius. Yeah. Obviously, Michael Keaton's a genius. You had Alec Baldwin and Gina Davis. Catherine O'Hara. Like, the whole movie's just flawless. Winona Ryder. But the theme, really, kind of silently through the whole movie, was Chinese food. I think they had Chinese food in every major scene of the movie, from beginning, middle, and end. Even the big dance sequence where the food like attacks them, and like.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
The only thing that wasn't necessarily Asian food was the shrimp cocktail.
Right.
And that was, but everything else was. No, you're right. It was a lot of Asian food. That's awesome. And
they even talked about Winona Ryder's character talked about like the MSG, and the soy sauce and all of that. But even so, I can't watch that movie without craving, some Chinese. And Chinese is just one of those things. Like, I went through a phase where I had it once a week for years. Like, every Sunday was Chinese food day,
Mm-hmm.
Wow, interesting. I did the same thing with the Hong Kong buffet in downtown Kokomo through most of my high school years, but it was on Saturdays.
Nice.
And I'd go, and I used to weigh 310 pounds, so this explains. I used to spend 4 hours at that buffet from like noon until 4 p.m. on Saturdays.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Learning Chinese, talking with the owners, and eating the entire time. It was pretty bad.
I love it.
Bell peppers and beef. Getting down, man. Oh God. And with chopsticks the whole time. It's gotta be authentic.
Right.
gotta be authentic. Nice. Yeah. And that's interesting. It makes me want to go rewatch Beetlejuice just to be like, yeah. I mean, because I definitely remember, especially because their first few nights in the new house, that's what they're eating.
Yeah.
I remember because of the boxes, and Catherine O'Hara slamming it down, like, oh. upset. Yeah.
No, there's been a lot of talk about redoing the movie. I think they've been considering it for some time now. It might actually come around full circle.
I thought they were doing a sequel.
Okay, a sequel. See, because I'd hate for them to redo something that's already perfection. You can't mess with
people. No, yeah, that's what I meant. Like, I think they were gonna,
it's like redoing Clue or something.
A sequel, that would be interesting. I mean, I'm always hesitant about it, but like,
especially 30 years later.
Especially 30 years. But I mean, the thing is what we don't question is anyone in that cast and their ability to pull it off.
Like, right.
Every single one of them could come back for the sequel, and they're all tip top shape. Catherine O'Hara just finished Schitt's Creek, right? We've got Christine.
Winona Ryder was in Stranger Things.
Winona Ryder. I was Stranger Things. Yes, and she killed that, right? Michael Keaton, I mean, Birdman, the founder, everything he's been doing
pretty much
the past like 10 years, right?
And they're bringing him back for Batman, I believe, in one of the upcoming movies.
Yeah, they are. For the Flash movie?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
And not Affleck.
No, I think they're going but, because there's like an alternate universe type of an angle. I saw it in one of the universes.
Oh, it's like a multiverse.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I should have thought of that because the Flash movie, because he's going to be exploring hitting this the sound this time barrier.
Right.
I'm excited. Yeah, so, I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. No, I think that'll be excellent. Yeah, that'll be. I mean,
so what do you think comes out first? The new Flash movie or Black Widow?
That's been our running joke. What's going to come out first? And then whatever it is, or Black Widow. I don't know. I thought Black Widow was supposed to be out.
It's supposed to come out July 9th. But I still like making the joke because it hasn't been like 2 years.
Yeah, for sure.
It feels like 2 years, so it's been that long. But
okay. All right, let's see. Out of my last two. All right, I'm going to go back to TV shows here. And it's another reality TV show.
Okay.
Yeah. You're gonna.
I mean, you can watch all the reality TV you want. I just don't.
I've never been crazy about reality TV either.
No, me neither. And this is the thing. I will.
Like game show things are cool. You know, like okay.
I'll tear reality TV apart all day long. There's just a few shows that I really like, you know, like Kitchen Nightmares. Like I like Kitchen Nightmares. I like Gordon Ramsay because I know that he's not actually an asshole, right? Like we know he's not actually an asshole. He plays that character on TV. He's actually a great cook. I've cooked a lot of his recipes. They're freaking amazing. He knows food well. He knows the science of it. And I appreciate that more than anything. Someone who knows the science of cooking, like that's how I study chemistry. So somehow seeing a Brit abuse colonists who didn't know how to run a successful restaurant is oddly satisfying and makes me miss working in the food industry when I watch Kitchen Nightmares. Like,
right.
I never get tired of, I mean, like, it's one of my daughter's favorite shows too. Me and her will sit and watch Kitchen Nightmares and she'd be like, I don't understand why they think that's fresh. That looks disgusting. You know, it's kind of fun watching her freak out about it, but yeah, like I just love the it's both relatable because growing up in Kokomo, we've seen plenty of shitty restaurants, you know, our whole lives. At the same time, I've worked in enough fresh food restaurants that serve, like, it feels great to serve great food.
Right. Yeah.
When you serve a great, like, you are proud of it. You're anxious to get it out to the table. You want your customers to be happy. You look forward to going out and collecting the tip because you know that they were satisfied when they walk away. It's really great when you know that you're basically working for a chef rather than for a brand name.
Right. You know, right.
It's a whole different ball game. So yeah, like you get to see both sides of it in Kitchen Nightmares. You see the shitty business with no chef, that where it's actually a cook who gets paid hourly and not a chef who gets paid salary.
Yeah.
And then they are being trained how to run this business by an actual chef. So you get the best of both worlds in that show. In each episode, you know, I get to learn from a master and learn what not to do. Kind of see how, you know, hometown feels, kind of thing.
Right. Right?
Yeah.
Well, speaking of shitty restaurants, Mouse Hunt.
Mouse Hunt.
And
oh no.
My get to the point review on this one is two brothers in the restaurant business inherit a haunted house occupied by a demonic mouse. In Home Alone style, the mouse outsmarts the two grown men repeatedly until they finally give in and give the mouse their souls.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds like you went the Tim Burton route on that one.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's kind of accurate.
What do you think of the implications of the movie? Watch the movie again.
See, this is the thing. I've watched it recently.
Oh, yeah?
Because when I forget what episode it was we were doing, I had to watch Mouse Hunt and then it didn't make my list.
Oh.
Yeah. So
I wonder what that would have been.
I've watched Mouse Hunt recently. I know. I'm
kids movies, maybe?
I think it was kids movies.
Because it's a little adult to be a kids movie.
Yeah. I think it was kids movies. I might have watched
it. Still, the best part is the part with Christopher Walken as the pest control guy.
Pest control guy. Oh my gosh. It really is great. Who doesn't love Christopher Walken in anything? Right. You know, I've done.
He's the best part of every movie he's in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. And so
that was my number four.
That was your number four. Okay. Yeah. So, Charlie.
Okay, I'll go with another weird one. I love unusual ones about food. I'm gonna have to go Hook with Robin Williams, the Peter Pan movie.
There you go. That was one of the ones I thought of.
Well, I gotta mention the scene where they're sitting around the table and the kids are trying to get him to use his imagination.
Mm-hmm.
And he can't do it. Yep. And he's talking about how he's just hungry for like bacon and coffee. And the way Robin Williams, he can just describe something and you're mentally there, you know, while he's describing it. And then they have the big food fight and you see like the giant turkey legs. And I've never made it through that movie without starving to death. Like, it's just never happened.
Yeah, that's...
You know, giant turkey legs is definitely a weakness for me. Even in if you see old like fantasy movies,
where they're like eating that,
like eating the big turkey leg. I'm always like, oh, I've had a big turkey leg in like a bowl of soup before, like medieval times, and they serve with like this giant dinner roll. That shit was the bomb, man. Like, you know, and so like, yeah, like big ass turkey leg. Like, oh man, I want a big ass turkey leg. Yeah, yes,
totally sounds amazing.
Totally feeling. yeah, for sure. All right, okay. So it looks like my number five is going to be Chocolat.
There you go.
From the year 2000. And for those of you who don't know this movie, it is a French fairy tale that sweeps you off to a totally different world and where chocolate is a vessel. And so like this, it's such a unique drama romance movie for the sake that it feels so fairy tale.
Mm-hmm.
Like it feels otherworldly and fantasy, yet everything's still grounded in reality.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's just this really amazing mysticism type feel, like impression that you get just watching the movie.
Right.
And I remember the first time I watched it, I expected not to like it, you know, just because I was like, oh, you know, it felt like it was supposed to be a Lifetime special when I first started, just in the first like few instances.
Mm-hmm.
And then the narrator sweeps you away and you're like, oh, okay,
yeah,
like, this is cool, this is already cool, like, you know, you get the Little Red Riding Hood vibes. Mm-hmm. And stuff like that too. It's very interesting.
So it's interesting that you mentioned Mystical Candy, and that I did my two out of order, my last two. Okay. My last one is Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And my get to the point review is a documentary of shut-in Gene Wilder, rip, luring unsuspecting children and parents into his mansion so he can systematically pick them off in increasingly convoluted ways. Inspired the Saw movies. No, like, I mean, you remember all those scenes, like, when they're licking the wallpaper, or, I mean, oh, God.
Like, what is it? I want to say it's the Corridor Crew. They made Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory rated R.
Oh, yeah.
They did a rated R version where, like, you know, it's all gruesome deaths of the children.
Right.
Yeah. And, you know, it's because
you just have to consider the implications.
You just have to think. Yeah. It's like when it comes down to it, it's only because of a movie in suspension of disbelief that we're like, oh, those kids are fine. Those kids died.
Yeah. Those kids,
he has dead children in his furnace, in his chocolate pool, shrunk in the backyard, probably tossed out with the rest of the trash and crushed under all that weight. Yeah. It's pretty gruesome.
Definitely
pretty gruesome. All right. And so that's wraps all us up, right?
Yeah.
We each had five. Charlone, have you got any honorable mentions?
Honorable mentions for sure. Wedding Crashers. Aside from it being one of the funniest movies of all time, in my opinion, plot is around weddings, and weddings, the whole plot is around food. So they're constantly bouncing around for weddings, eating crab cakes and little Reuben sandwiches and just
crab cakes. As soon as you mentioned Wedding Crashers, I was thinking about how Owen Wilson is stuffing the crab cake into Vince Vaughn's mouth, and he's like, I love that. So they're perfect together. Like, you know, if ever there was a gay couple that I wanted to be my best friends, it's Owen Wilson and Vince Vaughn. They're married, right? That's not what that movie's about. Okay.
That's what the sequel's about.
That's what the sequel's about. Yeah. 2022.
Wedding Crashers is just a flawless movie. I mean, I love it. What were you going
to say? I wanted to say that it got awfully low ratings.
From critics, right?
From critics.
Yeah.
And, the audience loved it. Which disappointed the hell out of me. I mean, it's just, you know,
It's a raunchy comedy. Critics always underrate those. Yeah,
they do always underrate, which is interesting to me considering the light of Hollywood that's come out over the past two
right,
years.
Yeah.
They want to critique raunchy comedies when they're living in one.
Yeah.
Except for theirs.
There's no comedy.
Lack, yeah, they lack the comedic effect.
Yeah.
Totally. So, yeah. Yeah. They're just straight up raunchy. So, take it easy, critics.
Yeah.
Give us a break. At least we know what's fantasy.
Not everything is Oscar worthy.
Not everything is. This is true. Not every movie is supposed to win an Oscar.
And it's also worth noting that most of the best movies that kind of survive the test of time, they aren't really appreciated in their time, you know? It's not until 5, 10, 20 years later people are like, you know what? This is a flawless movie.
Yep.
Yep, yep, yep.
I love people are finally giving Treasure Planet the love it deserves.
Right. Like Treasure Planet. Now, hold on. Aren't they supposed to be remaking that or something too?
They're talking about maybe making a live action remake of it.
And like, I think that would be interesting.
That one actually, I think, would work.
Yeah. If they,
I mean, really they all work. They make CGI, money. But for me,
right. No. You know? Right. But if they have the CGI polished on that mm-hmm. with like the sets, I could see it being beautiful.
You got to imagine Disney would, right?
I mean, I hope so. I mean, but at the same time, there's still movies coming out where the CGI is cringeworthy
for
me.
Not too many Disney movies, though.
I guess not. No, I guess Disney's definitely going out all on this.
I mean, they're going to spend the money because they know they're making it back.
Yeah, this is true. I guess so. All right. Well, if we can expect the best from anyone, I guess it should be Disney. All right. Well, anyway. So, Charleon, that pretty much wraps up our program. I'd like to roll out the red carpet for you, sir. Anything you'd like our audience to know, what you've got coming up, let us know. Like, for instance, what is the name of your cooking interview show?
It's called Cooking with Chef Leon. That's CHEFLEONE. You can find that on youtube.com/C/Cooking with Chef Leon. Or just go to YouTube and type in Charleon. CHARLEONE. I have somewhere in the neighborhood of 300 videos up on YouTube currently. So I believe there you can find anything, not just my cooking show. You can find links to my music and music videos. You can find links to scenes of TV shows and independent films that I've been in, Chicago PD, Chicago Fire, scenes on Empire. And upcoming, I'll be featured in an episode of Power, Book 4, Force, which is filming currently here in Chicago. And I'll be on the pilot episode, episode 1.
Cool.
That's awesome. All right, sweet. And so which social media is probably the best one for our audiences to follow you at?
If you want to see the video clips, YouTube is probably the best go-to. Instagram kind of consolidates it too. So if you go to Instagram and search Charleon, C-H-A-R-L-E-O-N-E, my Instagram page, you can just see everything just kind of step by step, ABC 1, 2, 3.
Gotcha.
Okay.
Nice, nice, nice. All right. Awesome, awesome, awesome. And if geek is the new chic, shouldn't that flow into your coffee drinking game as well? The selection of vintage, geeky, and cheeky mugs can be found on eBay, fulfilling occasions from full to cool. To see our selection of mugs, click on the link in the description below to aid in an expressive drinking experience.
And looking to start a podcast? Buzzsprout is hands down the easiest and best way to launch, promote, and track your podcast. With Buzzsprout, you'll get a great-looking website, audio players you can drop, detailed analytics, look to promote, and more. Tools to promote and more. Following the link in the show notes, let Buzzsprout know we sent you. Gets you a $20 Amazon gift card if you sign up for a paid plan and help support our show. Let's create something great together with Buzzsprout.
Beautiful. And we will see you all, folks, next time. All of the links for Charleon's channel, Instagram, etc. will be below. Charleon, we thank you very much for joining us, brother. That was great.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Get to the point.